I'm very pleased to introduce Jing Cheng.
Thank you, David. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I would like to thank the Independent Institute for giving me this opportunity to speak here. And also, I would like to thank Carl Close for arranging this panel. Today, my topic is Tiananmen Square Movement and China. It's a big topic. Being a participant and a student leader in the movement, I would like to share with you my thoughts on this movement from the perspectives of the history of China. Hopefully, Professor Brooke can give me some credit on that. So based on my understanding of the history, as many of you know here, before 1989, China has experienced a series of historical events which set the ground for the democracy movement. We can track it down to 1990, the May 4th movement. But I would like to start here from 1949, when the Chinese Communist Party drove the nationalist government away to Taiwan and established the People's Republic of China. Mao called his revolution a new democratic ideology revolution. In Chinese, it's 新民主主义革命. Very nice name. His party was fully supported by the Chinese people, intellectuals, workers, peasants, and even many business people. Chinese people were all expecting a great new China. Everybody is pretty excited. This China in which people will become masters of the country. Unfortunately, they only found themselves in a series of man-made disasters, one after another. Anti-counter-revolutionaries movement, anti-rightist movement, Great Leap, three-year natural disaster. They call it natural, but it's man-made disasters. Cultural revolution. According to unpublished official statistics, 80 million Chinese people died unnaturally from 1949 to 1979. Deng Xiaoping, a communist reformer removed by Mao during the Cultural Revolution, established his authority in the party and launched the reform and open door policy in 1979. From 79 to 89, the Chinese government has conducted economic reform and some political reform, mainly in the areas of restoring the economic development and social order that were destroyed by the Cultural Revolution. The economic power of China and the living standard of the Chinese people were greatly improved as a result of the reform. However, Deng's reform barely addressed the key problems of the political system: a one-party system without any check and balance, and the planned economy with very limited private ownership and economic freedom resulted in serious corruption and social injustice. So economic reform seemed reached a dead end without compatible political reform around 1989. Since the end of the Cultural Revolution in 1976, some Chinese intellectuals has been thinking about the cause of China's tragedies and seeking for a solution to transform China into a modern country. Some of them, like Wei Jingsheng, saw the problems with the dictatorship and advocated democracy. Some of them, like Hu Bing, saw the problems with the communist ideology and launched the China Spring overseas. China Spring is a magazine to fight with the communist ideology. Some of them, like Fang Lizhi, saw the problem of freedom of thinking, advocated the liberty of thoughts. However, their activities were quite limited to small circles, and their movements were cracked down and contained by the Chinese government. Because of the government's crackdown over the democracy movement, some of the students in 1989 were unaware of the work done by our early generations. However, many of us had experienced the student movement in 1986 and 1987. These two movements are very small scale and pretty much just among the intellectuals and universities, lasted for a very, very short period of time. Hu Yaobang, as many of you know, a liberal communist leader, stepped down in 1986 because his sympathy towards the students and the intellectuals who were calling for the freedom of speech and the westernization of China. Nevertheless, many of the students have felt strong dissatisfaction about the reality and the urgency of call for change. Hu's death in April of 1989 triggered another spontaneous student movement. Learning from our lessons in 1986 and 1987, the student movement, the students of Beijing University established the first independent student union in the 1989 student movement to lead and organize the students. The Preparation Committee of Autonomous Student Union of Beijing University, and I happened to become one of the seven founders of this organization. Unlike the underground student organization in 1986 and 1987, which it was cracked down by the government very easily, it operated publicly, and it was very popular among the students, and it seeks legal existence with the government. Although we had very limited knowledge about democracy and freedom, we had learned China's constitution, in which it states that every Chinese citizen has the rights of speech, freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of assembly, and freedom of protest. We had learned the history of May 4th movement, although in the Chinese Communist Party's version. And we have read about Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and Poland's solidarity. And many of us had read Gorbachev's New Thinking. Besides organizing the student movement in peaceful demonstrations, the Autonomous Student Union of Beijing University had made five achievements. One is set a clear demand for the movement, which incorporated the demand of the students for democracy and freedom with the demands of general public for better living and social justice. Two is set the principle of peace, rationality, and non-violence for the movement. Third is initiated the dialogue with the government. Fourth is helped workers and Beijing citizens to establish their independence, to establish their independent associations. Fifth is to experiment and practice the democracy. I would like to give a little bit thought behind these ideas. Why we try to establish independent student unions? One big reason we think why China, the government is so, the corruption is so bad, and the political system is so bad, and brought Chinese people so much tragedy and pain, suffering, because there's no check and balance in the government. People has no voice in the government, and whatever the government do, nobody can say no to them. So we think maybe it's better for us to build up some kind of independent force, which is outside of the Chinese government system, which whenever the Chinese government do something wrong, we can speak out, and we can also input our thoughts into their policy making system. and we expect the workers, peasants, and the citizens, the intellectuals, every group of the society will have the similar organization, so we can inject some checks and balance into the political system. The other reason why we set the principle of peace, rationality, and nonviolence, because we all expect China to be transformed in a peaceful way. It's only when China, the opposition force in China, has a peaceful, rational, and nonviolent moment, and that will stop China to stop the revolution in China, which a lot of people may prefer revolution, but it really brought Chinese people a lot of, it will bring Chinese a lot of pain and a lot of suffering. The last one I want to point out is the 1989 moment is the first large-scale mass opposition movement in China. And after the crackdown of the 1989 student movement, the opposition movement survived. It survived inside China, it survived overseas, and it became very influential overseas with a lot of support from people like you and from the international community. And it survived inside China, even though the Chinese government has put so many people in jail, but after came out of jail, many of them have devoted to continue fighting for democracy in China. And I see a very, very good sign of the opposition movement in China. It's virtually in existence before 1989. Now it's almost everywhere. For example, last year's democracy, Chinese Democracy Party, which tried to register their legal existence in China. It covers 24 provinces and cities. And I see another change in China, which is very positive. Many Chinese people after the June 4th Tiananmen Square massacre has abandoned the communist ideology. People no longer believe in communism. I think it's a good sign. Maybe many people began to believe in other things, religions or individualism. But everything's better than communism. And I think this will set a good foundation for China to transform into a democratic country in future. So what are we going to do in future? I think there are two major tasks for the Chinese people and also for our friends who support China. Well, we should continue to support the opposition movement in China, because opposition movement right now is much more mature, and it carries the principle of peace, rationality, and nonviolence. It will for sure become a key factor in the peaceful transformation of China. The other major task is a new building a new culture for China. I think the Chinese Communist government has destroyed the Chinese traditional culture. And as I like to say, they have put, they have two system of cultural value system. One is called the party culture, which is really the central the essence of the party culture is, I call it 党文化 in Chinese, is hatred, which is everybody hate each other and try to kill each other, try to stop each other, and try to achieve with any necessary means. As Professor Brock said, this is the order the soldier got from the above. That's why they start killing people. The other culture is called cheating culture. The government cheat you. Like government say, okay, you should be good people. Like you should contribute yourself to the collective, to the country, and you should be selfishless, and you should do good things for other people. But unfortunately, they do nothing of it. So they just want you to be that good person, that So the heart of it is a slave culture, and make you a slave. So they listen to you, not listen to the party and do whatever the party want them to do, to keep the party in the leadership all the time. So I think we should continue working on these issues. Of course, the economic progress, I think it's also important. I'm glad to see the Chinese government officially endorse the free market economy. I'm pretty sure like they are continue doing it, even though I think without any political change, political reform, they cannot go very far. I worked in Hong Kong as a management consultant. I worked with many international companies and a state-owned enterprise in China. I saw they have a lot of difficulties without political reform. The government will continue to have heavy intervention in the economic system, and it's very difficult to guarantee the justice and the real free competition in China. So that will create a major barrier. And I think when the economic progress continue going and the people will realize this, we'll push the government for political change. And thank you very much for supporting us. And I wish you continue supporting us, and I wish China will become democratic soon. Thank you.
Some of you may have been here in late April when we had George Ayiti speak on Africa, and he termed the abuse of statism in Africa as the mafia state and the vampire state, and other terms like that. And obviously you can see a certain continuity in this issue.